Business Trend Center podcast, where we talk about trends and how to use them to grow your business. My name is Manny Turan.
And I'm Adam Hartung.
We are Spark Partners. We're here for you every week to deliver to you news and updates and some tools you can use to grow your business by fully understanding trends. And, you know, one of the things that's happening right now, as we all know, is this battle in the background for the microelectronic or the chips of the world, of which many of them are manufactured, about 80% of them are manufactured in Taiwan, the ones we use. And, you know, if we think about the world around us, we are surrounded by microchips. We're surrounded by chips. We've got them in our cars. We've got them in our medical devices. We've got them in our electronics. This communication that's being enabled right now is happening because of chips. And many of them are manufactured in Taiwan, of course, which is a bit of a hotbed. So we want to talk today about how these things are all framed up in as sort of the one of the resources used in enabling all these trends that we're part of today. We, you know, Adam and I talk a lot about trends, about asynchronous life and mobility and all these things. Even the gig economy is in part enabled by chips. So, Adam, let's start off by discussing the recent passing of Gordon Moore, who purported that every 2 years, the amount of transistors on a chip doubles, while at the same time, the cost is cut in half. And that, of course, is called Moore's Law. So let's talk about this whole framework of chips and how they've become a bit of a hotbed in the world sphere.
Yeah, well, you know, the interesting thing was that Gordon Moore actually came up with that quote about the doubling of circuits on a chip in 1965. So what we now see is that effect, you know, where if you're doubling something, the geometric impact, as people like to say, of how big it actually becomes. From 1965, now we're all the way out to almost 2025, right? So 60 years later, and look at the amount of power we have on a computer chip. So that was pretty prophetic, what he said. It did lead to the birth of the computer age, right? And at first he just said the number of chips would double. And by the way, he didn't say that was a physics issue. He didn't say that was a law of physics. That's why it got called Moore's Law, was because he said it was a trend. And he identified that as a trend, that we would continue to pack more onto the chip. And at the first article in 65, when he wrote it, he didn't actually say that the cost would have. That got added on later because it was true that as the power of the chips went up, the prices kept going down. So you were getting this double benefit of more power and less cost, which, as we know, like I said, by the time you get into the 1980s, you certainly have the explosion of the personal computer industry as we know it today. And that's bled down to mobile devices and everything else. So we owe a lot to Gordon Moore, but we also owe a lot to the people who've been developing this technology ever since. And, you know, when I was in college in the 70s, Hewlett-Packard and Fairchild, these were the people out in Silicon Valley that were making chips. And then Fairchild had a plant that it was located, I believe, in Birmingham, Alabama. And they made a lot of chips, not only for commercial, but really had a big, big position in the government marketplace. So where we were using chips for airplanes and navigation and navigation devices, radars, and all that kind of stuff, Fairchild was a real leader in that. And in 1982, 83, in that period, it certainly would have been true that there was this, you know, tremendous growth of these companies, Hewlett-Packard and Fairchild. Now, Fairchild doesn't even exist anymore, I don't think. If it is, it's certainly not relevant. And Hewlett-Packard went on to quit making chips entirely. It started off as a device manufacturer. Remember the old O-scopes or oscilloscopes that we used to use? Yeah. And they've to the extent it's still much of an entity, it's really making laptops, which is an outdated product in and of itself. So once again, we see the trend, right? We see the trends come, trends go, and the power that they have as we switch the technologies. But I think it's worthy to notice that if you'd have paid attention to these trends as they were coming and going, you would have stayed on top of them. And Fairchild did not keep its R&D in place. And then Hewlett-Packard did not. And so for some reason, what we started seeing, though, was that manufacturing chips required people in a closed environment with they were very careful on how you made them. It was a costly process, and people discovered they could manufacture them offshore less costly than onshore. It didn't take long for the whole industry to move to Asia. The industry was located in California. California is the gateway to Asia, so they went to Japan first. and they started making chips in Japan. That turned out that they could be cheaper if they were made in Taiwan, and that's where the industry is now located, is Taiwan.
Right.
And we never, I guess the reality is policymakers didn't really think a whole lot about it. You know, the chips were getting made, they were getting sold to the United States, including into our government environment. And our growth in trade was growing with Taiwan. They were one of our big trading partners, we're their biggest importer. And nobody kind of stopped to say, you know, that's only like, you know, a few miles away from China. And, it, you know, China still doesn't recognize Taiwan as a country. And China right. still thinks that they could annex it. But we just didn't pay attention to that sort of thing during the giant growth of the Chinese factory boom that occurred in the 1990s and 2000s. America was just apparently very, very happy to get cheap goods. You know, we could run down to Walmart and get a T-shirt for a buck and a quarter if it was made in China. And there was some complaining about, did we lose jobs because we would do things like cut down trees in Georgia and send all the trees to someplace offshore. Like China, and they would then cut it into lumber, make it into furniture, and send it back to us. seems a little illogical, but we were like, well, you know what? I can go buy a coffee table for, you know, $50, and that's what I want. So we just were very delighted to have all of that trade until, you know, what's happened more recently. And yeah. In the last 5 years, we've seen a regime change, and we've seen much more of a shift back to control from the more open position. You know, people remembered. Another Tiananmen Square, when the young man, it was 1986, 87, around that time, when the young man stood in front of a tank in Tiananmen Square, China, and stared the tank down and it stopped. And people over the world were like, okay, this is kind of where China is now. It's a place where people can stare down a tank and stop it. Few people realize they went and hunted that guy down 2 weeks later and then he was never seen again. He was either in prison and never released or worse. So China wasn't the free country we thought of then. But certainly under Xi Jinping, it's become even less of a free country. And so with less of a free country, trade is not as good as it was with China. And the next step, which is what do we do about all those chips made in Thailand? I'm sorry, Taiwan. It, you know, if there's now, you know, military exercises, as they're called, in the South China Sea and all around Taiwan. And constantly now, well, I'm being not a joke, it's almost every day, there's something in the press, if you're reading about it, as to what's happening in terms of submarines, naval activity, or air activity around Taiwan. So the heat is dialed up. And with the heat dialed up, they're talking about bringing the manufacturing back to the United States.
And I think the whole thing here is this has become another quote unquote oil. This is another resource, right? Another thing that for the future might be water scarcity. These are all things that are going to be battled either over with bullets or with strong words and policy and all that. And, you know, the CHIPS Act is something that was put in motion last year and is putting in billions into revitalizing manufacturing of chips into the U.S., but it's not going to happen overnight. It's going to take years and years. You know, I live here in Tucson, of course, up the road in Phoenix, Taiwan Semiconductor, TSMC, is building several very large plants and is putting in $10 billion to do that. And I wanted to give our listeners and our viewers a little bit of an idea of what this means. I'm going to bring it to life by using a small SD card, which, are, of course, our listeners can't see, but our viewers can. This is an SD card. So in here, you can store pictures and videos and whatnot. And so
3/4 inch, right?
About the size of my pinky nail.
Yeah.
Okay.
And about as thick as your pinky nail as well.
Yeah. It's super thin. It's like half the size of a postage stamp. So 20 years ago, the biggest you could get is about 8 megabytes of information. Okay. Right now, I can go on Amazon and buy one of these that has 2 terabytes. So I'm going to put this into context because every time I hear these numbers, it blows me away. If you think about a mega second, so mega basically means a million. So a million seconds, take a guess of how long that is, Adam, just off the top of your head.
Oh, a million seconds. I'm going to say a week.
Pretty close. It's about 11 and a half days.
Oh, okay. Half off. Okay.
Take a guess of what a tera second would be.
So 110 days.
31,700 years.
I was a little wrong. Wow. Okay. So I don't work with Terra very often.
Yeah. So a giga. Yeah, a giga second is something like 31 years. Okay. And a tera second is 31,000 years. I mean, so it blows the mind of how massive these numbers are when you start doing the math. And do it yourself. I mean, I've done the math because I didn't believe it. But this is really something that is everywhere. These chips are in our, I mentioned earlier, our cards, pacemakers. So when we're in need of these things, it no matter of, if, you know, you might need it to survive, to live. These autonomous cars are going to be powered by the technologies that are enabled by these chips. So it's becoming and has become a major hotbed. Now, let's kind of shift in and look a little bit closer to this, Adam, with respect to the trends. And let's actually even think about how it pertains to a small business. So why should a small business even care about what's happening in Taiwan?
Well, the issue here is that everything you touch involves these electronics, and so consequently, you've got your payment system, Square, whatever payment system you use. If you still use old fashioned cash register, that's got a computer chip in it. You're certainly doing business across the internet, so that's currently loaded with chips. You've got banking for auto payments, automatic payments with things like PayPal and things like even your Visa and your automated Visas, all that's involved in chips. So every part of the business that you deal with, if you're using CAD/CAM to produce drawings, because you're making something, right? It could be a piece of furniture, it could be a machine. So you got a CAD/CAM system. You're doing payroll through Intuit, right? So all of that, everything we do is sitting on chips these days. It's actually, I can't think of any business other than maybe the young man standing at the corner selling oranges that he picked up the day before out of somebody's orchard, and he's selling them for cash on the side of the road. He may be the only guy in business today that's not doesn't have a chip between him and success.
Well, assuming that he's not driving a car,
yeah,
maybe it's a car that was predated all the chips out there. So the industry is really shifting, and with the advent of the information superhighway here, things are being exchanged very quickly, and it's going to be interesting to see what happens with respect to these mega powers. You know, of course, last week we heard about the these powers like China, Russia, India, Saudi Arabia, and I forget Brazil. These countries that are in alignment and looking at bonding together as their own world economic power, and what do they have to really offer or control us with, if you will? One of those is, of course, chips.
Well, it was 10 years ago that I wrote a column on the future of the U.S. dollar, in which I pointed out to people that the economic clout of the United States was not growing all that fast, whereas the economic clout in China was growing exponentially. Was growing at three times the rate of the U.S. economy. And it was able to just, again, using trend lines, you can make a pretty clear point that by the year 2020, the Chinese economy would be as big as the United States economy. And the question would be, would the U.S. dollar still be the currency of choice? The U.S. dollar had emerged as the currency of choice after World War II. It had stayed that way when the euro was created. Then we thought that perhaps that would take on the position, but it did not. The dollar still stayed strong. With Brexit happening and the British falling out of the euro in marketplace, that's gotten a little bit smaller. So now what China is literally trying to do is say, could we come up with, could we use the yuan, Y-U-A-N, I pronounce it yuan, could that become the currency of choice? And this what they're trying to do is facilitate that with this group that you're talking about with Brazil and Russia and this new level of alignment. That would be very damaging to the United States because it would really reduce our clout in the world. When we say we're going to put an embargo on Iran or an embargo on Iraq or an embargo on Russia, the enforcement of that is because we have all the dollars, so we can track all of the cash flows, and we can see, oh, okay, so if you're not going to get paid. If you're sending something to Russia and we've embargoed that, then what happens is you might have sent the goods, but you're not going to get paid because we control the dollars and we can see where they go. And international use the SWIFT system for that, SWIFT. Well, if you just wind the clock back to 2000, about 85% of all transactions globally were done in dollars. That number has now fallen to 60%. And that creates this opportunity that China and Russia are stepping into. So should Russia somehow prevail in the war in Ukraine, that increases its strength and increases its position. And if it really allies with China, what they're trying to do is create a new Eastern bloc that would start with Russia and wrap around China, and they'll try to gobble up the countries that are around them as well, right? Like they did with Georgia, they'll try to go for Poland, and then they could easily reach out for the Philippines, possibly Japan, and certainly Taiwan. So what we're seeing is something that's not ethereal. It's not out of a book. These are trends. This is the direction it's currently headed. And it's why a lot of people should be concerned and you should be paying attention because of the high level of dependency that you have. And to understand just how important this is to you, I think we talk about TikTok. Here's one of an application that I don't use. I personally don't find it all that mesmerizing. I don't find the dancing and things all that fun. But then again, I didn't ever use Vines, which was part of Twitter, which started. TikTok was born after Vines was born. And then Twitter shut Vines down. TikTok took over. And so these short form videos and entertainment have been very popular. You know, I think part of it that really bothers me is that because we have no regulation of social media, something I think is highly problematic that we have no regulation. It allows people to do things like, you know, let's go have a challenge. And that challenge could be drinking soap or something like that. And people are doing these things and getting sick and actually dying from these because there's no regulation on them. Well, the United States Congress and most of the politicians in Washington have now gone really anti-China. And we saw that last week where they came in and said, what we want to do is ban the use of TikTok entirely. I mean, it's using a sledgehammer. There's no nuance to that. It's not sitting down saying, what is the relationship with China and how do we manage that better? It's not a nuanced approach towards security and technologies that we use. It's not being thoughtful about, you know, the requirements on Taiwan. But it is a sledgehammer that says, hey, we'll shut down the use of TikTok in the United States. And if we do that, it'll certainly hurt the investors that are in TikTok. And that will get back to China. And I think it's likely to happen. I mean, I don't have a trend line for that because this is new stuff, this sort of banning. The Trump administration tried it and it got blocked. But now the CEO was called in front of Congress last week and, he didn't hardly get a chance to talk. Everybody just kept telling him that they thought it was high time where they banned the platform. And I think he took a lot of heat, too. I mean, I did get to see it. I saw a little bit of it, and then I had to go to something else. I came back and watched chunks of it on recording. And, I hate to say this, but I think a lot of politicians went after him because he was Chinese. I mean, just the fact that they had an Asian in front of them made him mad. They didn't like it. And if there had been a white face there, I don't think it would have been quite as belligerent. I hate to say that, but I think it's true. Racial bias really is a big thing in this country.
Yeah.
And so this young man he's not really Chinese. He's Singaporean. And I believe he lives in Singapore now. He lives in Singapore or Hong Kong with his wife. But, you know, he's a young guy. He's like 40 years old. But he has this history. He ran a business of an investment company in China. He's got a Harvard MBA. He did some investment in the United States. And then coming out of the investment group that he had in China was where they bought the company that launched off TikTok. And that sort of savagery against the Chinese, which is, I think, what I would say our politicians are today. They're savage against the Chinese, really got taken out on him. And he got blasted away. Again, the point here is that you and I aren't politicians and we don't try to sway policy. But what we see happen is when things aren't addressed early, then we lose the nuance. And when you can have the conversation and try to make something out of it, you can try to say, well, how do we get things going in the right direction for both of us? But if you don't address that early on, what happens is time goes by and then it can become this really sort of binary switch. How do we do something dramatic? And so now we're saying we'll put $280 billion into the CHIPS Act. We're going to move chip manufacturing in the United States. Therefore, we'll be less dependent on Taiwan in case the Chinese attack them. And at the same time, we're going to stop trying to bring in as many technology goods from China. And they're certainly putting a lot of fear in people that if you use a Chinese made technology product, that they could be scaring you. I mean, we had a senator say in these hearings that they wanted to know if somebody using TikTok could be recorded. I mean, that's sort of, that's the MGM version of how technology works. You know, I know you can't just turn on a switch and all of a sudden your phone starts videotaping you. You can't turn on that switch remotely. Somebody can't hack in and turn your television, your camera on. You know, there's gateways to get there, but it can't happen automatically. So we've got people that don't really know much about technology, but what's happening is it's all coming out because of this fear of China.
Yeah. And I think one of the things that is important to state here is, you know, Adam and I, we're not fear mongers. We're not, you know, sounding some gong that you need to go put your head in the sand. You know, we're here to inform. And I think information is just very crucial. And understanding how information flows and understanding that everything is interrelated. You know, if your business is 100% on TikTok right now, if you are a TikTok influencer, I would really think about what you do going forward. And, you know, these things, like you said, they're very binary, and this is kind of uncharted territory for us. And I think the whole world is just looking to see what happens. And as a business owner and an executive, you need to be aware of what's happening so you can make the right decisions. You also said something very important, Adam, about the idea of bias. And that's one thing that we've talked about in the past. And I think it might be worthwhile revisiting that and kind of understanding what is bias and why is it important as a business owner or an executive to know that you have bias, number one, but what to do about it.
Yeah. Yeah. My son, 2 years ago, he finished his PhD in bioengineering, and he had a number of Asian friends that were in the PhD program with him. And they frequently talked about the fact that when they would go for interviews, the Asian students were not treated the same way that the white students were treated. So even though they had PhDs, they were often stereotyped as being mathematicians only, lacking logic capability, often stereotyped as being untrustworthy. That, you know, if you brought them into a job and gave them a corporate secret, you couldn't depend on them to keep it, even though many of them had lived for several years in parts of the United States, gotten an undergraduate degree, and many of them were eager to apply for citizenship. And then the Asian Americans that were in class as well were painted with the same brush as the Asians who were from China. So there's definitely this tendency to look askance in the hiring process. And so for years, we've had bias in hiring of people of color. And that's, I think, definitely true in the Asian population. And we see actually in places like California, there's a lot of attacks on Asian people just on the streets. And people, for no good reason, they're making these attacks because they've developed some sort of a fear about Asia. And as business people, we have the opportunity to say, how do we cater to that market, help those people out? They need products and services. And how do we try to use our business to stand up hiring and selling products that can take that trend and build on it the right direction, which is to say, let's not go down that bias road. Let's start trending it towards the other direction.
Indeed. I'm reminded of, you know, I heard this, speaking of in social media, I was watching this this guy on Instagram a few days ago talk about how if more Americans adopted an immigrant mindset, that we would be in a much different place. And that idea was that, you know, immigrants coming to this country have something to prove. They're hungry. They're hardworking. And I'm, of course, painting some giant brushstrokes here. So I understand this comes with a caveat that this man's perspective. And it makes me remember of a quote by an author named Michael Hopp. He says that hard times create strong men. Strong men create good times. Good times create weak men. And weak men create hard times. Have you heard that before?
No, that's first.
It's pretty impactful if you think about it. And, you know, he actually references the fall of Rome when he talked about that and some of these, you know, civilizations that really struggle to get to where they are. And then once they get there, everybody's basically relaxed, partying and living a sort of a debaucherous lifestyle. And ultimately it leads to corruption and then the collapse of these great civilizations. Again, we're not sitting here saying that this is going to happen here, but it makes you think about where you are, where we are right now. And especially as we start doing more business internationally and then things start closing off, we need to be looking at how we can make our businesses grow, which of course is the whole point of this podcast.
Yeah. And I think that it's good for the all of our listeners to keep in mind that our objective is to grow our revenues, right? And you can't grow your revenues if you're not looking at the big picture as well as the picture out your window. You know, what's likely to happen going, you know, what's going to happen next. And so this discussion we're having is, you know, whenever these things are occurring off in the South China Sea, are you thinking about, what, you know, how dependent you are on your laptop, how dependent you are on your mobile devices and the software you have? And where is it? You know, what applications are you using on a regular basis? What's the source of those? You know, who wrote the source code? Where's that source code kept? You know, and are these companies being manipulated? Do they have ownership that's manipulating the companies in some way? Because when you're dependent on software or you're dependent on hardware, that's no different than any other piece of your supply chain. It's no different than an employee. And if you don't have the source and have trust in the source, you don't want to have you know, mistaken trust or misplaced trust just because you were ignorant and you didn't bother to look into it. Instead, you want to be sure you're doing your research. You know what these products are. You know how you're using these products, and you know the risks. And you, what's your backup plan, right? What's your scenario plan? And you know, when things go not the direction they were last year, but in some other direction. And are you preparing that? At the end of this, the biggest thing that I think we should take away from this discussion about what's been going on with transistors and electronics and how that's affected world politics is that are you doing scenario planning? The reason you and I, Manny, the reason we talk about this is because we're always thinking about what's the next year, 5 years, and 10 years going to look like. So we're always developing scenarios for ourselves, for the articles we share, and for our clients. And we're keeping up with the trends. So we're saying, hey, if we start out there looking at the big stuff and then bring it back home to thinking about how it would affect your business. And more business people should be doing that. They should be doing what you said, like, okay, what does this have to do with me? And if you can't make that connection, then realize that's a weakness and you need to try to solve that weakness.
It's incredible how many businesses don't think about that. And we couldn't have, if you think about 2019, no one could have predicted that there would be a global pandemic, that this would make everything sort of stall, you know, and the acceleration of all these trends, like we talked about with the proliferation of doing school from home, the Zoom thing, the decline of movie theaters, and all these things happen more quickly because of the pandemic. But what you could have thought about is what happens if your business if some global trend is affected massively, such that you can't do business as usual. You've got to be able to pivot, and everything's interconnected. And you know, it's also very important to realize that the rank and file Chinese citizen are just trying to do their best, right? They're just their families. There's people that are going to work every morning, and you know, we tend to especially the media and the government villainizes, you know, these people, and they're just people as well. And it's really the politicians that are making a lot of these major issues come to life. One of those we've talked about in the past is, of course, Vladimir Putin. And I know there's some news here recently, Adam, that you and I shared in the pre-meeting regarding what happened with him.
Well, yeah, when the International Commission put out a warrant for Putin's arrest, they actually put out two warrants. And the second one went to his number two was a lady whose name is impossible for me to pronounce. It's Russian. But what they indicted her or put a warrant out on her for was for kidnapping. And in fact, both warrants, what they specifically addressed as war crimes, was kidnapping 16,000 children out of the Ukraine and taking them back to Russia, where they're putting them into educational camps to turn them into Russian people, to, you know, teaching them that Russia is a greater country and to give up their Ukrainian roots. Now, but people probably have forgotten because we seem to be a country where nobody has a memory. But the Nazis did the same exact thing in the late 30s and early 40s, where they went to Poland and neighboring countries and kidnapped children and brought them into Germany. And then told them through the schools that they put them into, made them think they were German, taught them how to speak German, told them to forget about any previous family and never go back to Poland again. And even when World War II ended and some of these children were able to be identified, they had so identified with being German that they didn't want to return to Poland. So what we're talking about here is, again, that big demographic trend of the aging population. Russia, we talked about in a previous podcast, is short people. It has not had enough population growth. So its demographics are short, and they need people. Now they're in a war. They've lost somewhere between 250 and 500,000 casualties in the war. Plus, they've lost at least 500,000 people to immigration, where people have emigrated out of the country. And so what they've started doing is stealing babies from a foreign country and bringing them into Ukraine. So these trends are powerful. They are powerful trends that affect how we behave. The fact that the United States is so anti-immigrant is actually a big negative for our country. You know, we should have the ability to bring in people to grow our economy. We saw that very successful in Germany the last 30 years. The growing economies typically, well, they have a growing population. It could be organic like India and India, or it could be through immigration, which is how the United States has maintained such a strong economy. Man, the worst thing we could do is have no immigration and simultaneously walk away from the Ukrainian war and allow the Russians to take over Ukraine, increase their strength, increase their population base, hook up with China, go after the stability of the U.S. dollar. That would be horrible. That would be an economic, that would be a scenario for economic disaster. So that's one that you and I track on a regular basis. If the, you know, the foreign currency transactions continue to move to the yuan, that's going to be bad. If the populations of the world continue to collect together, like it's happened recently with this, where we started today, talking about multiple countries banding together to be in opposition to the United States, and the United States doesn't do some things about it, you know, get on the world stage and manage this more effectively, then it's going to be tougher and tougher and tougher to do business in the United States.
Very well said, Adam. I think it's important for us to end this on a positive note and realize that overall, this is probably the best time in the history of the world for doing business. Things are still very bright and the economy is strong. You know, we may be going to a recession here end of the year, but I think overall, we've got a lot of good things going for us. Just be aware of the trends, keep your eyes wide open, understand that there's bias in your mind and people around you, and make the right decisions based on good scenario planning, understanding the trends.
Well said, Manny.
All right. Thank you, Adam. I'll talk to you next time.